Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the My Ely Story Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Ross, coming back to you after another bit of a hiatus with the wonderful Alana Dorr, who was instrumental in the early days of the Ely Art Walk and the resurrection of Ely's historic state theater. She also spent 12 years as executive director of the Listening Point Foundation. A big thank you to the Ely Tourism Bureau for sponsoring this podcast, along with What's Up Ely, featuring the one and only Lacey Squire and my mostly silent self. And coming soon, a brand new podcast in collaboration with some other fine folks in our neck of the woods. It's going to be fun, so stay tuned for more details on the brand new podcast coming in the new year. Good things abound. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast, and if you'd be so kind, leave us a 5-star review, follow on Facebook and Instagram at @VisitElyMN, and shoot us an email with your thoughts and ideas, tourism@ely.org.
Hi, this is Alana Dorr, and this is my Ely story.
Welcome, Alana.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
It's fun to be here. It took me a while to find the house, but, you know, I managed.
I know. It's a tricky neighborhood to navigate around. We should probably say you and I live
kitty corner from each other. Yep, That's right. So it really wasn't that hard.
I was hoping not. I was watching for you. So I was like, you're going to make it. You're going to be great. Well, it's so good to have you here. I've been wanting to have this conversation with you for a long time. We always have some great conversations. You've done some pretty fun, exciting things here in Ely. You've been a part of some interesting organizations. Before we get into that, if you could talk about your background, where did things start for Alana Dorr?
I grew up in Chicago, and I left there in about, I don't even know the dates. I went to college in River Forest, and then I lived on the East Coast, the West Coast, and out of the country. But the Midwest really, really meant more to me after I left. I never knew that the Midwest was like a real place. And then I realized it really is. It has a whole different way of living life than the people on the West Coast or the people on the East Coast. And so when I lived in Vermont for a number of years, over 20 years, and I had gone canoeing out of Ely, and I just thought being back in Ely would be a good idea. Then, while I was in Vermont, I had the opportunity to be the curator at the American Museum of Fly Fishing.
Oh, really?
And that worked out very well. And at the time I was there, we were doing a major traveling exhibit called Angler's All. And I knew, having watched the video about Sig Olsen, that he was a fly fisherman. So I contacted the family and asked if we could have some of his fishing gear.
Yeah.
And so they sent it out to me, and we put it in the exhibit. And it traveled to 5 or 6 different West Coast and some places in between. And when it came back, I decided to bring the fishing gear, Sig's fishing gear, back to Elizabeth. And so that was one of my first, like, a social contact here other than going canoeing.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. And so I went and I met Elizabeth, and I got to see the writing shack and everything, at which point I burst into tears when I walked in the door of the writing shack. But that sort of opened my eyes to Sig, et cetera. So then when I moved here, I was on the board for a while, and then they asked if I would consider being the executive director at the Listening Point Foundation.
Okay.
Bob Olson, Sig's son, he was running this LPF. out of Hayward, Wisconsin, and he really thought that it should be here in Ely. Mm-hmm. So I agreed to that. And if you ask me what year that was, I have no idea. But anyway, I did it for about 12 years.
Right.
Retired in 1976. Steffi O'Brien, then I found her, and she took over, and that was wonderful. And what else?
If we could back up just a little bit. So you mentioned that you lived on the East Coast and the West Coast and overseas.
Right.
What was it that had you in all these different places?
I don't know that I've ever thought it was like it was one thing. When I went to India, that's where I was, I was married at the time, and he was part of a AID program, Agency for International Development.
Okay.
And they had an overseas program, and India had a program. They had five engineering institutes, and the Brits, the Russians, the Germans, and the United States, they all helped out at different places. So I was in Kanpur, India, which is about 250 miles south of Delhi.
Okay.
And it was great. And we went for 1 year and loved it and extended to two and then extended to three.
Really?
So it was really quite fine. It was just a life-changing experience. Okay. And I still have friends from there. Yeah. And I got to, you know, go to Nepal and Kathmandu and, you know, just places.
Wow.
So, yeah, it really was. It was so, and I was young. I mean, I was very young.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was great. And then, I don't know. Oh, the East Coast. When we came back from India, he started teaching at, in Orono, Maine. So we were there for a while. And then that marriage didn't last. And so then I moved to California. I'm not sure why, but anyway, I did.
Try the other coast.
Yeah, right. Yes. And then that, I was out there for, I don't know, maybe 3 years. I'm not sure that anybody out in California is happy. I just really think they're at the end of the landmass and they have no place else to go.
Just worried about falling off.
Or something. It was not good. It was so hot. Anyway, and then what I did when I left there, I got in the car and I thought, I'm going to just drive across the country till I find a spot that looks beautiful.
No kidding.
And I thought if I had to, I could go back to Maine, but I really didn't want to do that. I mean, I knew that if I got that far, I've got no place else to go. But I landed in Vermont and I was there for 25 years.
No kidding.
I think it was that long. Yeah, I don't care much about dates, I guess.
So then you saw most of the country, you were overseas, and then how did you end up in Ely? What brought you here? I mean, you had that social connection.
It was that exhibit, you know, when I was working as the curator. And when I came here and I visited Elizabeth, I just thought this is really kind of a nice little town here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I came and I was married again at that time. And I had a stepson, I still do, but he went to high school here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you know, we were here in Ely and it's just fabulous. I mean, I was just saying the other day, this town is, I just love it. I love it because it's so much and I love it because it's not so much. And you can block out all the nonsense that's going on in the world if you want to, or you can, you know, fence in your yard and have dogs, you know, I mean, that's what you can do. So yeah, no, I think it's, and I love the people. I love all of them. You know, I mean, like whatever we're dealing with or whatever, you know, I mean, there's some people I'd like to, you know, say, could we talk about that again? You know, like and straighten that out. But other than that, and my years as the director at the Listening Point Foundation, that was fabulous. I was instrumental in the Wicks owned the house that Sig Olson and Elizabeth lived in. Mm-hmm. And then they had to sell it. And I can remember Chuck Wick coming into my living room and saying, Alana, we want to sell the house. And I said, well, I think the foundation ought to buy it. And Chuck said, but Alana, he was on the board at the same time. And he said, we don't have that kind of money. And then I, in my naive world, said, oh, I think I could, $250,000, I can do it.
No problem.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while. I didn't follow any of the rules where they say, you know, you have to call the people or send them a letter, then call them, then go see them. I just called people.
Yeah.
And it took me longer than I thought. I did have a list. A couple of people just heard about it and volunteered, but I wanted to sort of involve as many people as I could. I didn't just want somebody to, I didn't want it to be a one person thing. And so there were a number of people that said, oh, well, you know, we can do that. $10,000, sure, you know. So it took 9 months, but it was fine and it worked. And
it's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I guess it was. I mean, I didn't.
$250,000 in 9 months.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty
okay,
fantastic.
I didn't realize it was as, yeah. But anyway, it worked out really well. And it's great. And then the writing shack, which is on this property, as people know, I imagine, was just put on the National Register of Historic Places.
Right, right.
So Listening Point is on the register, and so is the writing shack.
So if you could back up. Some of our listeners may not know about Sigurd Olson and Listening Point Foundation. So if you could just kind of give an overview who Sig Olson was and what the Listening Point Foundation is all about.
Okay. Sig was a writer in the 50s. His first book was published then. And he was one of the first people that just talked about the value of wilderness. Mm-hmm. And he has, I don't even know, 9 books, I think, 11 books. And he had a very tough time here in Ely. There were lots of people that didn't like him. He had eggs thrown at him on Sheridan Street. They'd go to church on Sunday and people would move to the other side of the church because they didn't like what he was saying, especially when the whole Boundary Waters issue came up. Mm-hmm. And we are still dealing with some of that same issue today. He was hung in effigy.
Right.
He went to give a speech at the high school, and the fellow that hung him in effigy is still here in our town.
Wow.
So it does make for a very interesting mix.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any problem with the mix. I mean, I think that it works. So.
Well, there's, you know, I think if you step back from it a little bit, you can see how that changed a lot of people's lives, people that had resorts in the Boundary Waters that
absolutely
would snowmobile and take float planes.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, Dorothy Moulter, a great example, you know, the last non-Indigenous resident of that area.
Yeah.
Really changed things for her when people weren't allowed to snowmobile and float planes couldn't fly up there.
Right.
So it really did change a lot for generations of families that had lived up there. So it is understandable. It's
absolutely.
Also, as someone who's lived in a lot of different places and presumably a lot of urban areas, you have a really profound understanding of the importance of protecting wilderness areas.
Yes. And and I think a lot of people in our town here have never lived anywhere else.
Yeah.
And the same process happens. Nobody likes to have somebody volunteer for the fire company when you're coming from a big city and you're going to come in with your ideas, you know. Nobody likes that stuff. I lived in a town in Vermont of 600 people.
Wow.
And they didn't want anybody in there, you know. Oh, yeah, you can come, but just don't say anything, you know. So come to our meeting. Sure, we'd love to have another volunteer, but.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same issue that I think, you know, keeps happening here. Where people's lives are affected by it. But the world is, if you look at the world, how do you not be affected by what's going on around you?
Right.
And so times change.
Yeah.
And needs change. So.
Yeah. And that's really the only constant in life is change.
Change.
And
that's very prophetic.
The more you want to fight it, the harder time you're going to have, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tricky business, but, I just I like the fact that there is less, I was going to say animosity, but I don't know if that's the right word, but less awareness of the world, I guess. And so everybody just keeps doing their little thing, you mm-hmm. know, and little things in life. I don't know. I appreciate being in a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As do I.
Yes. Yes. That's right.
So Sigurd Olsen, a very well-known writer. He was a teacher at the Ely Junior College,
right.
I believe it was at the time. And so the Listening Point Foundation came about after he passed away.
Yes. Mm-hmm. His son, Bob, and his wife, Vani, they both started the foundation because they wanted to extend Sig's legacy. And Sig and Bob didn't get along terribly well. And Bob was a world traveler, and so he was not at home very much. He was a diplomatic representative of the United States in lots of different countries. Mm-hmm. So, but I honored that Bob wanted everything about Sig to be out there because he saw the need for people having a better understanding of wilderness and what it can do for us.
Mm-hmm. And so the name of the foundation takes its name from his cabin.
From the cabin out on Burnside Lake. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's a wonderful little story that Sig was looking for a place. And he knew that there was a woman down. She had gone down to Florida for the winter. And he thought he would go see her. I can't remember her name. But when he was down there, just by chance, her daughter was visiting also. And her daughter heard the story. He went in to visit the lady. And the daughter said to her mom, "If you're ever going to sell this, Sigurd Olsen is the man to sell it to," because the girl had Sig for a professor at the college.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah. So so there's 13 acres out there. Or I don't know, something. God, I don't even remember those things. And he bought it. And then he had that cabin built and he had, you know, the people come and help to put it all together and everything. And it was just, and he has a wonderful section in one of his books about what he was feeling when he was building it. And he wanted to keep it simple. He wanted to keep it back from the water mm-hmm. so that it wasn't a distraction for boats.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to be right down 2 feet from the water, which so many people do.
Yeah.
He had a lot of very, very interesting ideas about the wilderness and about keeping it small and not having any electricity, et cetera, et cetera. So many, many people, and now the Listening Point Foundation, they have guided tours and everything out mm-hmm. there. Yeah, when I was doing it, we just had guides that would just take people, you know, whenever they called us.
Sure.
Now they schedule them, but
okay. Yeah. It is a really special place, and thinking about that, it is unique for the age of that cabin that it isn't built right up next to the water. Now it's not an option if you're going to build something new. You can't build that close to the water.
Yeah.
But it is unique in the sense that it's set back from the shore. As I recall, you don't really see much of it.
No, and you from blend in with it. Yeah. Yep.
And then there's a quiet little bay there. Beautiful Rocky Point, just an absolutely gorgeous piece of land on a beautiful lake. Mm-hmm. So what a great way to honor his legacy by keeping that place intact and preserving it and showing people where he drew a lot of his inspiration from.
Right. Right. And he continued that until the day he died. He was on snowshoes when he died. And it was just, it still is. It's still very inspiring to people. A lot of people that come and say, there was one man like that asked me his 50th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be out at Listening Point on the morning of, and I said, sure.
Wow.
You know, like, come on. And I didn't go out there with him, and he said he just sat out there like at the point for an hour.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great day. What a nice thing to ask about, you know.
Right.
Of course, that would just be a wonderful way to celebrate Sig's life, the guy's life, and Listening Point.
And so you were on the board for years, and then you were the executive director for about 12 years?
I think it's 12 years.
Okay. Yeah. And so it sounds like you really helped keep Listening Point Foundation alive and help it thrive. And I know did a lot of big fundraising for them.
Yes. And I did help it thrive. I mean, it was much smaller when it was just run by Bob and Vonnie. They didn't extend it out, but we did a lot for, well, like being at the Blueberry Festival and things like that, mm-hmm. having a booth there. And even, we had an exhibit down at the... down in Duluth, the aquarium down there. And then other small venues around, like if they were going to have a bazaar or something, we'd go and just go and just greet people. And that, and I love to do that. My dad was a salesman at Sears. So I learned from the best.
You learned that salesmanship.
Yes. Yes, I did. Yeah.
Well, it's exciting to see that, and I know Listening Point Foundation still thrives today. You mentioned Steffi O'Brien took over after your departure.
Right, and now we're looking for a new executive director.
Okay.
But there's Freya. I don't remember Freya's last name, but she's doing, she's being an interim person mm-hmm. until they find the real person.
Okay. Yeah. And then you mentioned the former home of Sigurd Olson, which mm-hmm. the foundation purchased from Chuck and Marty Wick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up kind of up on Beacon Hill.
Yes.
That neck of the woods.
It is. It's on Wilson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And his writing shack is still there. I always like that little section of Wilson Street in the springtime because it's full of lilacs.
Yes.
And you walk down that street and you're just overwhelmed by the smell of lilacs.
That's really good. Yeah, we did a really good exhibit at the Wolf Center, mm-hmm. and we replicated Sig's writing shack,
uh-huh.
and just, you know, had it all in the corner. It was really, that was a fun thing, and I happened to, I get hit by a car or something, I don't know, but I was in a wheelchair.
Oh my goodness.
When we were trying to put that together, and I'm such a hands-on person, it was just killing me to not be able to, you know, say, no, move that over. You got to move it 6 inches. You know? So finally I just said, Alana, just be quiet. Come back in here when there's nobody here. And then you can have one person help you instead of you trying to direct the whole thing.
God. Can we back up just a minute? Were you literally hit by a car?
I was.
Oh my goodness.
Not here. I was in Chicago. I was walking across the street near my brother's and I was taking some shirts for him to the cleaners. And I said, you know, Alana, you really shouldn't just cut across the traffic. You should go down and go to the light.
Yeah.
So I went down and went to the light. And then this lady was turning, never saw me, and she hit me.
Oh, wow.
I know. It was really very exciting.
I can imagine.
I wasn't hurt. I mean, I had a hairline fracture, but
okay.
I couldn't. I was still in a wheelchair.
Good to know it happened in Chicago.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
It's a pretty rare occurrence in Ely, not so much in Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So great legacy with the Listening Point Foundation. And it's a wonderful thing to celebrate the life and the legacy of someone like Sigurd Olson, who it's so much of his writing has inspired people to come here.
All over the country. Yeah. I mean, and the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A great ambassador for the wilderness area that surrounds us here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put in that time with the Listening Point Foundation, and mm-hmm. then we actually worked together on the board of directors for Ely's Historic State Theater.
Right, and that was a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun. It's been a wild ride watching that go from something the first time I went in there with the Otts, with John and Tanner, I went, are you kidding me? What are you thinking?
Yes. This is a disaster. I mean, there were still holes in the ceiling. Oh, right. My God. Yeah.
Right. And to see it now, to see where it's come in, 7, 8 years, maybe, it's absolutely extraordinary. And I know that you were an integral part of that.
I was. And one of the best things Well, I mean, I loved just working in the building because I like to decorate stuff, mm-hmm. or move stuff around. But when the board first got together, we kept saying we really need somebody that's going to run it on an everyday basis.
Mm-hmm.
And just by chance, Peter Schomburg lives next door to me.
Right.
And we were outside. He's shoveling in the winter and I'm shoveling. And I thought, wow, Peter, would you, I mean, I knew he wasn't working. So I said, Peter, would you ever think about, could you just come and be the manager for like 2 months and give us an idea of what we would include in the like job description when we put the ask out there?
Right.
And he said, sure. Well, then he stayed, what, for 3 years?
Yeah,
something. I think it was 3 or 4 years. So that was really a great gift for the theater. You know, he knows everything in the world about computers, et cetera. So he just was able to just do stuff and he didn't have to keep asking the board because we didn't all know stuff
right.
about it. Yeah, anyway.
And so Peter's got an interesting background. So Peter and Kelsey moved here from Seattle and he was working for some
Microsoft
computer. Yeah. Microsoft. Not familiar with it. No, I'm kidding. Little old Microsoft.
Yeah. And he worked there for like 11 years. So he did well.
And so was able to move to Ely just to kind of dial things back a little bit in his life.
No, I think from what Kelsey said, he got to pick the first 10 years where they'd be. Okay. And she got to pick the second 10 years. Got so she had seen somebody wearing a wintergreen jacket.
Ah, right.
And so she wanted to come and be here as part of Wintergreen.
Right.
That didn't quite work out the way she thought it would, but she's here, she's happy, and she owns Potluck Kitchenware.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. And she's got fabulous ideas. So,
Yeah.
Delightful woman.
What an incredibly dynamic pair they are. Doing really incredible things for the community. But I remember just being stunned that someone with a background like Peter was willing to just essentially volunteer his time to develop the manager position.
Yes.
At the theater. And that was sort of the offer that was brought to us, was he just wanted to help us figure it out.
Right.
And I know you had some gentle nudging behind that.
Yeah.
But it worked out so incredibly well. And I know there was a point where everyone on the board kind of went, we really need to pay this guy.
Yes. Yeah, that was good. That was nice. Yeah. No, I think it worked out for everybody. It worked out for the theater. It worked out for the board. It worked out for Peter. It worked out for Kelsey.
Yeah. And so Peter really helped the theater get off the ground. One of my favorite things that you were directly involved with at the theater that you kind of spearheaded was the green room.
Ta-da!
below the stage.
Yeah.
And a great moment that I wish you could have been there for, but I know I told you not long after. Alan Sparhawk, one of my favorite musicians, I had a total fan geek moment that night when I met Alan Sparhawk from the band Low. I was stunned.
Yeah.
And an amazing guy. But he got up on the stage to play their set and he said, this place has the best green room in North America.
Oh, wow. All right.
And I'm like, that's a Grammy-nominated artist right there that just said that.
Oh, great.
So that was extraordinary. So talk about that process.
That's a delightful little area down there. And Tanner's whole idea was he really wanted it to stay industrial.
Mm-hmm.
So we just had to not do much. It's got cement walls, for one thing, so it's very difficult to hang anything in there. And John and Peter, the two guys that do all the work, I can't remember, it's H&B work. I mean, they do carpentry and stuff and painting. They were very patient with me and very, instrumental in this is what we can do, Atlanta, this is what we can't do. But then I got to buy and pick out the furniture, et cetera, et cetera. And I showed it, I'll share it with Vicky Ott, and she loved what I picked out. So that was really good. And just tried to make it work and tried to make it as user-friendly as it can be, but at the same time, keeping some kind of industrial atmosphere and not, allowing, I don't know, what I would call chuchka, going up on the walls or something like that. So, it was really fun, and I enjoyed taking everybody down there. One very fun thing about the theater is the first year after we, after the all the seats were in and all of that was happening, the green room was in place, they we have a open house on Thanksgiving night here in Ely. And I was, we were going to, we decided to do it at the theater too, because that was new and most people hadn't seen the inside at all. We weren't, didn't even have movies there yet, I don't think. And so I was trying to figure out, and we, oh, we had Ron Forsman come and he made the popcorn for us. Anyway.
Former owner of the theater.
He was very helpful in just talking to him about, you know, what went on and what, what goes here and you know, what did you used to do. But so I just tried to figure out, well, like how many people, you know, would come here. So I talked to a couple of the store owners just to say how many people, you know, come in. And they'd say, you know, like 100 or, you know, 150 people. And I said to myself, okay, then I think maybe 500. I should have enough popcorn for 500 people. Well, then. Okay, so the night starts happening, and I have somebody standing at the front door with a clicker. We run out of popcorn. We didn't have any drink. The drink thing didn't come through. I don't remember now why. So I was greeting people at the door saying, well, I have good news and bad news. Bad news. Good news is we're so happy that you're here and you're very welcome. And the bad news is we've run out of popcorn because on the little counter at the end of the night, we had 1,526 people.
Unbelievable.
And it was, and people were sitting in there. They were just sitting and talking. They were just greeting people coming in the door. We used to sit in these two seats. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was so exciting. That was really good.
It was such a thrilling night to see the look of awe.
Yes.
On so many people's faces.
Yeah.
Who, again, like you said, used to come into the theater and you would choose your seat based on where the ceiling tiles were least likely to fall on you.
That's or raining. The rain. Yes. Yeah. And they'd bring umbrellas. Right. I mean, what? Yeah.
And to see it, and it was bright. The seats, they're replica seats, but they're you know, they're brand new and they look like the the original seats from from the 1930s. And again, like you said, there weren't movie playing.
They just walked around.
Come in and take a look at it. And people were in awe.
And they stayed. They stayed like an hour just sitting there and talking to their friends and neighbors and it was really cute.
Oh, it's such an exciting thing. And it just, it really takes me back now to those days where we were planning, you know, what are we going to get for a popcorn popper? Yeah. You know, I remember when we first ordered the popcorn machine and it first came, we were like, yes, we're that much closer. You can't have a movie theater without a popcorn machine.
Right. And I got the, I got a couple that donated that popcorn machine.
Yeah.
$3,000 for a popcorn machine.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that because, you know, you obviously had a lot of experience, as you mentioned, the with Listening Point Foundation, the purchase of the house and the writing shack, that you saw that as it's not an insurmountable obstacle to raise whatever it was, $250,000.
Well, it was also the right thing to do. I mean, that's why, you know, I liked it. I thought, well, I can do this because, you know, it's the right thing to do.
Right. So, so believing in an idea, believing in a concept, and then bringing it to fruition by going out and talking to people and utilizing your sort of social equity that you have in the community and with a diverse array of people, you brought that to bear with the State Theater and in our fundraising efforts.
And with, now that you're saying about the fundraising, the Ely Art Walk, when I first came to Ely, I was involved with that. And that was one of my things, was to go and talk to the store owners who were going to put the art in the windows. And then also to raise funds. You know, we, on the back of the little brochure, we used to have, you know, this is provided by. And there are people that I would just talk to every year and get them. And I really have no idea how much money I ever raised for that, for the Art Walk. But it's part of my dad's legacy, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. In fact, I'll tell you this. At my dad's funeral, there was an older couple that came. Well, I guess they weren't too old. They were probably about 40. Anyway, they came, and I got to talking to them, saying, "And how did you know my dad?" And I guess they must have been 60. Anyway, he worked for Sears in Chicago, and he worked in two different departments. When he first started, he was selling rugs. Hmm. Then he got to sell washers and dryers. And they said to me, "Your dad sold us a rug 30 years ago, and we had to come."
No kidding.
Whoa. That blew me out of the water. But he was just a fun, you know, you remembered him if you met him. I mean, he, yeah. So that was good.
Yeah.
So, well, maybe that's part of, you know, that outgoing whatever thing.
I can see it. I can see it, because I think anyone that's ever met you feels the same way.
Thank you. Wow.
That very kind, very friendly, outgoing
and
personality.
And I talk, I guess.
You talk?
Yeah, and I say stuff. Yeah. Wow.
And so, again, as part of the friend, it just occurred to me it'd be interesting if you had some sort of running tally of how much you've
money?
Raised over
Whoa.
The years for these different organizations you've been a part of.
Maybe I should go home and work on it. Wow.
It'd be fun to look. So you were a big part of development with the State Theater of...
And inside stuff. I mean, like paint colors and, you know, the seats in the little theater, in the greenstone. When we were trying to figure out which ones to buy, Dennis was going to have samples sent to us, and they were in Portland. And it was going to cost a lot to have them sent. And so I said, wait a minute. I have a friend who lives in Portland. So I called Anita. She's the daughter of somebody I knew from India. And I asked her if she'd go try them out.
Oh, wow.
And so she picked the seats that we have, which is just really...
That's great.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And so, speaking of seats, the seat plaques...
Yeah, Tanner and I worked on that. That was his idea, but we did the little brochure and all that stuff.
Which is a great idea.
And it's still going on. I mean, I just sent an order in for 6.
No kidding.
Yeah, so that's really, and they're not all sold yet. I think there's like 30 left or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're so great. I know being a part of the Root Beer Lady musical that happened in the theater back in September of this year, Andy Hill, who played the role of Jack Pine, Bob Carey, had a seat plaque that he and Paula had purchased. And he offered up, I think he had a $10 bill, and he offered it up to whoever was sitting in that seat. If they could find the seat plaque with that quote that he had thrown out there.
Wow.
And he just $10 out of his own pocket. And the first night that he gave it away, the person was just thrilled. And they took that $10 and immediately put it in the donation bucket for the theater.
That's great. I didn't know that story. Oh, that's
so
great.
It was really neat to see something like that come full circle.
Right. And it's fun. I mean, people like to be involved. Oh, speaking of those kinds of things, one of the other things I thought of at the Listening Point house, at Sig Olson's house, was that we've got bricks in the patio.
Oh, okay.
And you can buy a brick and put your name on it and your whatever on it. So I don't have any idea how many are there. There's a lot of them there. And then Steffi continued it. I mean, we had a brochure, a little, you know, slip that you could hand out to people when they come in case they wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it is. I should make a list.
Fundraising dollars earned.
Yeah, there you go.
That's outstanding. Well, what a great contribution to this little community. And
can you
talk about, you know, you've given a lot to this community. You've done a lot for all these different organizations in Ely, for the community in general. Talk about some of the ways that the community that Ely has given back to you.
I think it feels a lot like, I mean, I lived in a small neighborhood in Chicago. And then I lived in the little town in Vermont with 600 people. I like that feeling of community. I like the feeling of knowing who's on your block. In fact, I still love it when I go into a room here and I don't know anybody in the room, I'm always amazed that there's this many people here that I still don't know, because I know a lot of people here. And so I just think that's really, I love that part. So then I'll go out of my way to, you know, talk to them and say, you know, who are you, or why don't I know? I don't know what I say, but yeah. So it that gives me a sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's really good, because I don't have any family here. So, yeah.
You've lived in Ely for, I mean, over 20 years, I would imagine.
Yes, 22 years.
22.
Actually, 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 22 years.
So can you talk about ways that you've seen it change and things that maybe didn't exist or weren't a part of Ely when you moved here that you've seen kind of come about, and how it's grown, how it's changed?
I think one of the best things now is the young people that are here that are doing things and leading things and owning things and participating in things and making an effort, you yourself included, because like doing the bike thing out there in the woods.
Thanks for including me with the young people. Appreciate
well,
that.
I think of you as, honey, I just turned 80, so.
You're the one person I know that still calls me kid, so I appreciate that.
So I love that sense of community, and I guess I've always loved it, like I said, having grown up in a like a smallish neighborhood in Chicago, and it just feels right, and it always has. It has never let me down. It has never, you know, when I got hit by the car, and then I also broke my ankle and stuff, people just showed up, you know, to help and to do stuff. So I feel very safe here. It's just really a good place to be. And it's, I've found like the people that helped me do, painted the house, or done some work, put up the fence for me. These are just great people. I just love that. I mean, and how it works. And I don't know. I mean, I might have a shamrock over my head or something, because the luck has been really great. I needed the guy that was painting my house. He said, Alana, I'm not going to paint the eaves on the garage because the roof is leaking.
Oh, boy.
And so if I paint that, I'm just going to have to continue to paint it because the paint keeps coming off. So I thought, okay, then I should get a new roof, I guess, on the garage. So then I call up Koval Construction. I leave him a message on Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock. And so then at about 2 o'clock, the phone rings, and it's him. And I said, so what do you think? He said, I don't, you know, is it bad? Or he said, well, wait, I'm out here at your garage right now. Why don't you come on out? So I go out, and he says, yeah, okay, we can do it. And he said, you know, Alana, I still think that we even have some of the shingles that were on your house, you know, like the same shingle. I said, oh, my God, really? And I said, so, and this is at a time when everybody's saying there's no, you can't get anybody. They can't come for months. And I said, okay, so when are we going to do this? He said, how about tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock?
Wow.
I said, you are, what? He said, I've got a big project that wants to start, but because of the rain, they can't go in with the big graders.
Ah.
So at 9 o'clock in the morning, six guys show up and they're on that roof. And by 2 o'clock, the roof is done.
That's amazing.
I love telling that story because it's like I feel like I'm, oh my God. Anyway, yeah.
Well, you talk about luck. You talk about having a shamrock hanging over you.
Oh,
be one of the most Irish people I know.
That's right.
Literally born on
born on St. Patrick's Day, and all my grandparents were born in Ireland.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. Actually, one wasn't. He was born in Iowa, but I lump him in with, they're
so
all
100%
Irish. 100%
Irish. Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. 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 Very amazing. And I love it. And I love just working it.
Oh, and you definitely do. I've been fortunate to attend a birthday party or two of yours.
Yes.
Always a good time.
That's right. And I'm going to do another one, this one. And yep, I'm going to do it this year. Oh, I shouldn't say that.
Well, it's out there now.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, yeah.
They know where you live now at this point.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, what an incredible time you've had here in Ely.
It's a, I just really, and my nieces and nephews who they live on the East Coast, West Coast, and they're in theater and all kinds of stuff, they really love it. But I did just find out nobody wants to live here. Because they live in L.A. and you know, all that stuff. So maybe when they're older, they'll learn that it's really a good idea.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting. You know, you mentioned this sort of influx of younger people that we've had moving here. I feel like, especially in the last few years, like post-COVID especially, but even before that, we were starting to see an influx of younger people moving to Ely. And it struck me back during the film festival. Speaking of the State Theater, we had our very first film festival back in February, and I was part of the team that helped put that on. And I remember at one point sitting around and looking at the crew, and a couple of team members were missing. And I realized, I think I'm the oldest person on the team in this meeting here right now. Like, how did that happen?
Wow. Because you were the youngest. I mean, a lot of years, you were the youngest person doing WEOY and stuff like that.
For sure. And so to see it come sort of full circle again like that was absolutely, it was stunning.
Yeah.
It made me feel a little bit old, but also... it gave me so much hope.
Excited, yeah.
Gave me so much hope that there is a renaissance happening here in Ely. These really dynamic, creative, outgoing people that have created a really vibrant social scene and a great
network. And they show
network.
Up and they do stuff and they decorate stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's really it's a great thing to see, and it gives me hope that we're going to see our community continue to grow and thrive.
Okay.
So what's on your horizon these days? What sort of things are you getting up to?
I'm cutting it back. I've had both of my siblings died within the last 2 years.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was tough, especially my brother. We were very close, and so I didn't read a book for 2 years, which was, I read parts of them, but I just couldn't, I don't know, sit there long enough or I could. Anyway, so I'm just working with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just going to honor that now that I feel like I'm I don't know if you ever get over the grief, but you handle it differently, I guess, as time goes on. So I'm just going to, the image I had when they told me that my sister died, I was out on the ocean on a paddleboard.
Really?
So nobody around, nobody is alive that knew me when I was a little kid.
Oh, wow.
And that, it never occurred to me that that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's something. I mean, it's a something. And it's different even if just, I don't, anyway. Yeah, so I'm, and then the other thing I might do is get a dog.
A dog of your own?
A dog of my very own. I've had a dog. Actually, I had two or three dogs here before all of the dogs that I've been taking care of.
You do a lot of dog sitting.
I do a lot. I've got two over there right now this afternoon. So I might get a dog. So I'm going to go to see Haley at Contented Critters.
Oh, nice.
At least tell her I can come and walk the dogs or something. And then maybe I'll meet somebody that I just have to take home.
That's great.
Yeah. It's a good thing. So that's what I might do. Or nothing. I don't want to travel right now. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I need to. For my birthday last year, I invited 9 friends or 8 or something, and we went down to the Cascade Lodge in Tofty, you know, on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because 7 years ago, I stopped at the Cascade Lodge to have lunch. And on the wall there, they have an electronic countdown to the next St. Patrick's Day. And I thought, I have to be here.
Honestly,
I had to do it. So we all went down. We had a great time. We played games. And we were at the restaurant the night of my birthday. Everybody that was in there sang happy birthday to me.
Oh, wow.
For my 80th birthday. It was pretty special. Very cute.
That's very special.
Yeah. And I didn't want to do a party because of the COVID thing and my brother dying and all that stuff. So
right.
So I just, we just did that. So that's why I decided I'm going to have another party on the next St. Patrick's Day.
Looking forward to it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, Alana, thank you so much. It has been, it's been a pleasure knowing you and being, calling you a friend and a neighbor. And I'm just, I'm so grateful that you've been in the community here and for everything that you've done and the fact that we've gotten to share space and share time together. I feel very fortunate.
No, I feel fortunate to have you across the street.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. You do good things too. I've always, and your voice of course is fabulous for that. So it, speaking of which, is it ever coming back? WELY? We don't know.
No idea. Not my circus anymore. No.
Oh, okay. They're not calling you to say, don't you want to work for us?
Well, there is. It doesn't exist at this point. So here's hoping we'll have a radio station back at some point. But
yeah,
in the meantime, we'll keep the Ely podcasts alive.
Okay, let's do that. And we're going to cheer for our volleyball team.
Yes, our volleyball team
tomorrow
is making a run in the playoffs right now.
They're playing for the championship, are they not?
Section championship, I believe.
I believe so. In Virginia tomorrow. Great kids. Great. It's a great town.
It really is. It's an amazing community. And, you know, you mentioned when you were recuperating from your injury and people were just showing up to help you.
Right.
I went through something similar.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, as a single parent, I was going through a really tough time and envelopes of cash would show up in my mailbox anonymously.
Oh, see, look at
grocery
that.
Gift cards, people from a local church said, can we come over and help clean your house and get your kids involved in cleaning the house?
Wow.
I mean, growing up in the suburbs of the Twin Cities, you were lucky if you knew your next door neighbor.
Wow. Okay.
And here we have such a strong community of people that are there for you when you need them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't have any qualms about asking people for help or, you know, anything. I mean, I would just do it, and I know they'd show up. So, yeah, it's really quite a delightful town.
And to bring it back around, when you were first discussing Sigurd Olsen and his legacy and a lot of the sort of inflammatory reactions to his politics and to his wilderness ethos, there's still that still exists. There's people obviously on opposite ends of the political spectrum
the environmental spectrum. It doesn't have to be political. It does seem to end up that way.
Sure.
It isn't. Yep. That's not what it's about. There's a bigger picture out here.
Right.
Yeah.
And my point in going back to that was I have met people that I would think I'd never get along with, that politically, philosophically, just worldviews seem to be polar opposites of each other, but I call them my friends and we're part of a community and we all have a vested interest in seeing this community thrive and seeing it be a place where we want to live, where we want our kids and our grandkids to grow up.
Yeah.
And For a town that can be perceived as divisive in a lot of ways, we really do have a strong sense of community and people really do look out for each other here.
Right,
and
right.
It's a beautiful thing.
Right. That's the fact that over 1,500 people showed up at that theater.
Right.
I mean, that said to me, wow, you know, this, we're making a real, influence here, or a real gift to the, you know, to the town. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, thank you so much, Alana. It's been
a
pleasure.
Thanks, Brett. This has been great. Let's do it again next week.
Let's do it again. We'll do it again. Anytime you want to come over and chat, the mic's always open for you.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much, Alana Dore. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening and much gratitude to Alana Dore sharing her Ely story. Please remember to subscribe, follow, visit ElyMN on the socials, and send us a message to tourism@ely.org. Until next time, be well, my friends.